arms or a few antique coins of worthless copper. The voice at Ivan's elbow was gentle, like the voice of a clerk politely requesting information.
Shall I ask him for his secrets, Uchitil?
Yes, Pietchal. I'll wait and watch.
Pietchal's appearance fitted his voice. He wore gray furs with matching gauntlets and hood. Most of the band was bearded. He was as clean-shaven as Uchitil himself. Pietchal, the sorrow, had pale, soft cheeks and a rosebud of a mouth that was permanently pursed in disapproval of the world and its evil. He resembled a priest who had spent all his life in a closed seminary, speaking only of good works and following the pathways of the Lord. Ivan stared up at him, seeing all of this. Pichal leaned over him, and the old man saw the eyes. They were like chips of wind-washed agate, frozen in the eternal ice of the farthest north.
Tell me now, and all will be well.
Yet, there is nothing. Please, on my wife's grave, I swear, nothing.
Then it began. And gradually, Ivan Ivanovich disappeared within the pain of the probing and cutting and rending of his body. Pietchal crooned to him constantly, like a father keeping a baby amused while he bathed it in warm water. At first, Ivan's pain had been a light, fluttering thing, like touching a hot iron momentarily or feeling the prick of a needle that hurt a moment, then ceased.
Tell Pietchal of your hoard, grandfather. This is nothing to you. Ah, that made you start, didn't it?
With a slow delicacy, Pichal forced the point of a knife down beneath a toenail, down to the quick, slowly thrusting and scraping, until it seemed to Ivan Ivanovich that the marrow of his bones was being rubbed raw.
You have your hearing, your sight, your voice, even this.
He touched Ivan's limp penis with the cold edge of a dagger.
You can keep them all, old man. Tell Pietchal everything and leave.
Nothing. Pietchal lit a tallow candle with a match. Then Ivan felt scorching heat on the inside of his elbows, then behind his knees and the soft, crinkled flesh. Ivan smelled his own flesh burning. His body tensing upward, he pulled at the cord so hard that they cut into his bloodied, swollen skin. From outside came the smell of roasting meat and loud, bellowing laughter. Pietchal stopped for a moment and stood, stretching his arms.
It is tiring, this asking of questions, is it not? Spare us both, and answer me.
Uchitil was drinking from an earthenware mug of Rabinyovka, a fiery vodka flavored with ash berries. Muttering something to Pietchal, he rose and walked out, leaving the door open so that the light from the fires outside the hut capered across the walls.
I believe you, grandfather. But if I relent, then Uchitil will flay the skin from my living body. Oh, I have seen him do it.
Ivan Ivanovich slipped painfully into madness. The agony deepened until he lost touch with it. Pietchal pressed hard against Ivan's eyes with the balls of his thumbs.
Oh, your eyes pain you. I can stop them hurting. Here.
From a shelf on the far side of the stove, he took a carved box of black powder that Ivanovich used for his ancient musket. Holding the lids open, he piled a neat little heap on each eye. The powder felt gritty, like having specks of sand in his eyes.
Now?
Mercy!
He might as well have begged the north wind or the layers of ice that were forming over the corpses of his friends. He heard, actually heard, the sizzle of his own eyes burning. When the gorilla touched the candle flame to the black powder, his nostrils were filled with the stench. When Pietchal burst his eardrums, Ivan felt only the stabbing pain. The lack of sound was somehow a relief, as though it was the start of a complete sensory withdrawal from the pain. Cutting the tendons in his jaw, burning his nipples, slicing his genitals from his body, leaving only the weeping raw wound, none of that registered with the poor creature that had been Ivan Ivanovich. Day and night, hot and cold, were gone. After that, it was over. Miraculously, he still breathed. His heart still pounded desperately, but his mind was dead. His head rocked from side to side, and a toneless, faint whimpering sound was all that came from his peeled lips. Uchicho returned and stood alongside Piachal, looking down emotionlessly at the old man's naked, ravaged body. His cold yellow eyes registered the blood, the raised blisters, the scorched eye sockets, all the dreadful mute evidence.
You have taken him too far, too fast, Piachal. Now he will tell us nothing.
I fear that's true.
The meat is nearly cooked, and all the animals are butchered and jointed. We can sleep here tonight and move on in the morning.
Why not stay here for a week or so? The snows are passing. Every time we move, it is farther north, farther east. Soon we shall be at the sea.
Yes, Piachal. Soon we shall be at the sea. If your whining continues, then I shall pin you out on the ice for the white bears to feed on.
But...
You should learn to hold your tongue, my brother, Sorrow, or I will rip it from its roots. You know why we move on.
You mean what the merchant told you?
Yes. Now, take this offal out and slit his throat. I am tired, Piachal.
Did...
What? You're making me weary, brother.
Did he say where they were, or how far behind us?
For a moment, Uchicho stared at him in silence, oblivious of the dying man on the bed behind him.
Piachal, the merchant said he had heard that there was a band of militia hunting us down.
But did he say where?
They were bastard horse sons, spawned in middens from the port of Magadan. Where, they say, there are houses and many stores and mongrel codsuckers who sit with their thumbs buried in their own asses while they send their puppies on horseback to hunt down men such as you and I, my brother. He said that they had heard we robbed and plundered and raped and burned and slaughtered. His very words, from what I recall of his blubbering. This so-called government that believes in some party...
And